The Beat podcast is brought to you by Nutritia and is designed for healthcare professionals only.
Hello and welcome to the final part of our mini podcast series on the topic of what are the options for uncontrolled seizures when drugs don't work. This series is brought to you by Nutritia Ketogenics and I'm Sue Wood, dietitian at Matthews Friends Clinics. And today I'm joined by Emma Williams, MBE, founder and CEO of Matthews Friends Charity and Clinics. Today we'll be discussing the impact of poorly controlled epilepsy on daily life, both for the individual with epilepsy and for the family around them. So welcome today, Emma. Lovely to hear from you today.
Yeah, it's lovely to be here.
And thanks for taking time out of your busy schedule to talk with us today. Just really want to talk about the time when your life changed, the day that your son Matthew had his first seizure at the age of 9 months. How did that sort of the epilepsy, Matthew's epilepsy, impact on you and the family in those early days?
Well, I think the first thing that happened was the shock, a massive shock. Obviously, the seizure came out of the blue. He was just having a bath and a perfectly normal day. And then it literally changed. I didn't realise that my life had changed within about 30 minutes. And I thought he was dying. That's the thing. The seizure wouldn't stop. It was my baby. I just thought he was dying. Ambulance came, took him off. They thought it might be temperature related, but he wasn't ill or anything like that. So, you know, we got sent home. And obviously from then on, you're watching your baby like a hawk. I don't think I took my eyes off him for about a week. Slept with me. He wasn't in his cot anymore. You know, obviously there was that panic, every slight noise that he made. And lo and behold, it happened again. So he was taken in. And then we got told, oh, well, you know, this is quite common for some kids. You know, that he should grow out of it. By the time he's five, some are more prone to seizures. He might have a very immature temperature gauge, you know, which means his temperature's only got to go up slightly. And then he could have seizures. So what they're going to do is they're going to put him on medication to try and stop that. So, you know, you go home and your baby is put on medication. You don't like it, but anything's got to be better than seeing what you've witnessed of your baby having a seizure. So you kind of go and do that and you think it's going to be fine because everything you read on seizures and epilepsy, you know, take your medication and it all goes away. Well, I fell pregnant with Alice shortly after that, my daughter. And literally I fell pregnant with her and it was somebody like flipped a switch with Matthew. And it all kind of coincided at the same time. And his seizures just took off. And he started having hundreds and hundreds and hundreds. I spent most of my pregnancy with Alice in hospital with Matthew. So... And the impact it has on that is, one, you're living on adrenaline all the time because you never know what's going to happen. You're in and out of hospital. We had a passport into hospital. We then bypassed A&E and went straight into the children's ward. There was all these kind of things. And then medication got put up and then it got added. And then when we're asking why the medication isn't working, they're saying it's just about finding the right one and then it'll be fine. And then... But it has a massive impact on the strains between relationships. I was married at the time. You know, you still have to have life carrying on. The bills still need paying. Work still needs to be going. I had to give up work. You know, I was on maternity leave, but then that maternity leave turned into I can't go back because nobody can look after this. And then the side effects of seizures come in, side effects of medications coming in. So, you know, Alice grew into a very, you know, was born into a very stressful household, you know, and it's all very well saying she grew up not knowing any different. But I think the biggest day for me was when I realised that she'd overtaken Matthew, and she was about 15, 16 months old and Matthew had had a seizure and she was bending over and patting him, this little, you know, toddler, and just making sure he was all right because that's what she's seeing me do. And that was a very telling time because that from that point on, I realised that it was here to stay and it wasn't going anywhere. And I had a bit of a breakdown after that one. And then the marriage broke down and everything, and you know, cut a long story short. So it had a profound effect. It puts massive strains on the family. And I tried to find out as much information. I went to epilepsy conferences and things, but I didn't fit into those conferences because it was all about reducing stigma and you can lead a normal life. And I'm looking at this going, nothing they're telling me is relevant for my situation. So it was then going back to try and find something else. So that's where my research path started about what else I could do to help my son. And I must have gone through every ology, homeopathy, reflexology, craniopathy, anything there was to help him. Yeah. Yeah.
Did any of the anticonvulsant medications seem to alleviate any of Matthew's symptoms at all?
We would have what we would call a honeymoon period occasionally.
Yes, you often do that.
Yeah, things would appear to get better for a few months. You go, well, this is it. This is going to get better. And then, lo and behold, no, it's not. So he'd have massive doses of status epilepticus. I mean, I've watched him seize for hours. Mm. And that's a real difficult one. I went from the stage of holding him, saying, please, God, don't let my child die, to I got to the stage where I'm holding him going, please, God, take him now, because I can't watch him go through this anymore. It's too much. I'm watching him suffer too much.
Devastating.
Oh, it was. It was absolutely devastating. I had a permanent bag packed. Well, my bag, Matthew's and Alice's.
Because, of course, yeah.
Because she had to come with me. I was a single mum by this time. So when he got blue lighted off, she had to come with me. I had like an escape bag, if you like, that was permanently done. And it was a long time before I could get rid of that bag, I have to say.
Yeah. So, and how long then was it before you started to, you were able to actually talk to somebody about accessing something else, which was ultimately KD, or ketogenic diet, but how long did it take before you were going into a pathway that ultimately you didn't realise at the time, but eventually it did deliver
I was Matthew was about 2 years old when I first found out about the diet, and that was thanks to Jim Abrahams and the Charlie Foundation. And I went into his neurology consultant, and we were under one of the best centers in the world, and I still believe that to this day. But the particular neurologist I was in front of at the time was not a diet fan, quite obviously. And turned around and told me that the diet didn't work. It was, the film that Jim had made, First Do No Harm, it was all Hollywood hype. Don't tell you about the terrible side effects. The diet's terribly unpalatable. It's basically cruel to want to put your child through this. And don't you think Matthew's suffering enough? So with that, as a mum, you're going, oh, okay, they're the doctors, I'm going to do as I'm told.
Yeah, of course, yeah.
So I did that. Matthew was also assessed for surgery at a later date, but by this time, I think he was about 5 when he was assessed for surgery. And it was found that he had too much scarring on the brain. They couldn't find where the seizures were coming from, and the scarring was now causing more seizures, so it was a vicious circle. So I was told to carry on with the cocktail of medications, some of which made him 10 times worse, and I had to get him off quickly. So there were, by this time he was in a very severe special needs school. He had to have a 2-to-1. His behaviour was through the roof. Everything in the house had to be padded. Alice's life was pretty miserable. No friends could come round. You know, I couldn't go out for a pint of milk without taking both kids with me, or having friends deliver things, you know. So it was very stressful. But again, every time I revisited the diet, I was told no. That it was no good, and it was just, you know, this is the way Matthew was. And I think what made it worse for me is that I was told that he would probably either be dead by the age of 12, or he would at best be in a residential home because I wouldn't be able to cope with him anymore. Now, neither of those options I was too impressed with. And I sincerely do not like being told that I wouldn't be able to cope with my own child, because, you know, he was my boy, and nobody tells me I can't cope with my children, being the mum that I am. But So it was one of those, I revisited the diet and I decided, right, well, I don't care how bad this treatment is. I've got to tick the box, because they were wanting to put Matthew back on medications he'd already been on. And to me, that was crazy. So I went back in and just said, I don't care how bad you say it is. I've listened to all your reasons and your treatments aren't doing any good. They're actually making him worse and our lives are getting worse. So what I need you to do is basically get me the diet. And the doctor turned around and said, well, actually, my colleague is starting a clinical trial on the ketogenic diet. I can put him forward for it. And that was the reason. It was like an alignment of all the planets at the same time, whatever you want to call it. And I literally had the appointment with Professor Helen Cross, who was a... That's when my first lesson got learned. It's not the centre you're in, it's the person you're in front of and what they believe and how they feel about it, because they will transfer that onto you. The first doctor made me feel terrified about the diet, made me feel I couldn't do it, made me feel like I was a bad mother for doing it, made me feel it was a cruel option. I go to another room, sit in front of another doctor who said, oh, no, well, we can do this, and spoke to the dietitian, and they were much more upbeat and they were positive about it. And they said, no, we believe that it does work. You know, there are side effects to it, but it's minimal. We can manage them. We'll be here to support you. So let's give it a go. And I went in there quite angry, because I was like, I'm doing this and you're not going to stop me. And I was kind of stopped in my tracks when she went, no, that's fine. Yes, you can. And you're like, okay.
Quite a shock. Yeah, you had to. It was. Down. Yeah.
It was a completely different attitude. So I was ready to go in and do battle, like I thought I was going to get what I wanted. And I was met with, no, that's absolutely fine. I can understand you wanted to do this. And it was a whole different feel to the clinic. And it was like, okay, so yeah, that was my first big lesson.
No, so that was incredible. And of course that was because there was a trial, you know, the trial was planned and there was this, you know, real interest starting, which was fabulous. And so what then were the sort of highs and lows? Can you remember the highs and lows of the early days of initiating the ketogenic diet with Matthew and how it affected the family?
I think, do you know, some of the lows when you start off, for me personally, for me as a mum doing this, especially as a single mum, you know, Matthew was 7, Alice was 5, 2 young children, lots to do. And having a severely disabled child, you have so many appointments, so many issues regarding education, social care. It covers everything. So you're quite overwhelmed with appointments and form filling and what you're entitled to and what you're not. So there was a lot of that going on. And so when you get the diet, for me personally, there was that I knew I had to do it, but it was quite overwhelming going, now all the responsibilities on my shoulders again. So sometimes you can feel a bit overwhelmed.
Yeah. You've already got, basically, everything was full on already. Yeah.
You've got your daily life that your hands are full anyway. But then you go into, right, I've got to do it because I've got to help him. I've got to at least try this. I've got to tick that box. So I think the first one, once you get over that, I cleared everything. I cleared all the decks at home before I did it. And, you know, if the ironing didn't get done or the cleaning didn't get done after that, then so be it. I kind of took that attitude. And I think for the first few days, Matthew, the one thing with Matthew is that he always loved his food.
Yeah.
And it was the one thing as a mum, even if he was having the baddest day, I could do his favourite food and he would like that. It was a pleasure to him.
A real pleasure.
Mm-hmm. So sometimes when I first looked at the diet, and back then the diet was a lot different than it is now, we've come on a long way, it was quite restrictive and it was, you know, I spent 8 hours a day in the kitchen producing tiny meals. And that was my biggest shock, going, he's never going to be full up ever. But of course he was, because it was just different components of the food. And so for the first few days, he was pretty miserable, because back then we went from completely normal diet to 4-1, bang, straight in.
Right. Yeah. Yeah.
So he had a real severe reaction. So 3 or 4 days in, So 3 or 4 days in, his ketosis skyrocketed and I couldn't wake him up because he was that drowsy and his breath stink of ketones. So It was why he got blue lighted in to the hospital, and he needed, his glucose had bottomed out and everything else. So he needed a few fluids. So I went in with all the information that I got from Liz, funny enough, my dietitian. And anyway, he had to, his glucose came up a little bit. He had some fluids and he was fine. I was a snivelling mess in the corner somewhere by this time. And my mum came over and brought us home. And I think that's obviously, looking back now, is where his metabolism was changing over, was clicking in. So he'd really, like, 3 or 4 days in, he just went wallop right downhill.
Yeah, and it was a fast, hard start, you know. Which we don't do now. So we don't tend
exactly.
to do that. So
exactly.
There's a good reason for that, yes.
Yeah, and that's probably one of the reasons.
Yes, exactly.
So, you know, I had massive support from a dietitian, Liz and Hannah, that were a part of the Great Ormond Street team, were absolutely phenomenal. They were on the phone to me every day. They were great. So we were all in, and that was really important in the early days. So they were really supportive. But then when Matthew came out of hospital, we stayed in for a few hours. Obviously, they released him home. And the next day, all of a sudden, he doesn't have any seizures. And that's the first time in, well, since he started, basically. And I'm like, you kind of hold your breath and you're like, what's going on? And then he would have, you know, we went a few days seizure free, which was unheard of. And then he had one. And then you go to the dips on that and you go, oh, no, is this going to be a honeymoon period again? I don't think I could deal with it. But then actually it leveled out for him and he has a 90% drop in his seizures. So it was a phenomenal change. And it wasn't just that, it was, you know, the seizures dropped. And then after 3 months of getting him established and obviously seeing how the diet worked, I went bouncing into Professor Cross's office again, literally going, right, meds off, come on, let's get rid of them. Expecting another battle, didn't get one. And she was like, yep, I think you're right, let's start with this one. And you know, when you, I've come out of her office several times, like with my jaw dropped, going, okay, well, that was easier than I thought it was. So she came in, slow plan. With Matthew, I had to take his wean a little bit slower because he's always awkward as far as that's concerned. So I've had to slow things down a little bit to suit him. But he, by 8 months, he was off all his meds and it was a different boy, absolutely different boy. So he was calmer, he was sleeping, which had a knock-on effect to the family. So Alice was now getting sleep during the night because her brother wasn't keeping her awake all night with screaming or shouting or whatever. He used to be quite violent towards Alice. You know, he would be violent towards anybody, but a lot of biting and hitting and the frustration, none of that. So laid back. I got what was left of Matthew back. And he's so chilled out. And him and Alice would then be able to cuddle on the sofa and she would watch a film with her brother and he'd just chill out with her and be able to do that. She could then have friends round. And all of a sudden, we weren't going to hospital. So there was none of this mad panic and this adrenaline going. I mean, it took me a good 2 years to get rid of the going away bag kind of thing, you know, to have, not have it packed. But it just, so I think the early days were really, you know, were tough insofar as it was overwhelming. I was getting used to something. Matthew did respond well and that made it easier because you could see what you were doing was helping. So that was a big benefit. And then, he did really well. And you just sort of tickle up. We had bumps along the road, you know, as you do. So he was going through puberty and we changed the diet from the classical diet over to the MCT diet. And that was brilliant for him. He thought it was his birthday after that. And then, of course, and I got used to it. So, of course, me from going spending 8 hours in the day at the in the kitchen a day thinking my life is over and I'll never do anything again. And it went down to getting organised, getting prepped, batching up, and it got easier and easier and easier. And
it's
such
a steep learning curve, isn't it? And it's that sense of it's down to you as well.
Yes.
You know, it's a combination of things. It's the actual learning new skills, learning new ways of looking at food, and the fact it's down to you.
Yes.
But as you said, it's those initial few months are the tough months. But then when you start to get the results again, you're really encouraged by your life. You've done that. You've achieved that, which is amazing. You know, it's your work that's achieving what's happening in front of you, which is fabulous. Yeah.
And I can't underestimate the importance of the support I got from Liz. as well. You know, having, I had a phenomenal dietitian and a phenomenal neurologist, and that they were very positive. Even if we had blips along the way, you know, Matthew may have had a few more seizures, we would get to the bottom of it. We would work as a team. You didn't feel you were alone. So, you know, you'd work as a team.
As you say, you need, in the early days when you're learning the learning about it, you absolutely need that support. You need to be able to access support when you need it, don't you?
Yeah.
So it just, it, I mean, gives you that confidence as well and reassurance.
Oh, massively.
Yeah.
I mean, I got to, it got to the stage where Liz would then phone me and say, I've not heard from you in the past couple of months. I just need to check in on you to see if you're okay. I went, yeah, we're all fine. Matthew's doing well. You know, I'd send in my monitoring every week. She went, well, your monitoring's looking fine. You know, I just want to touch base with you, you know. So it was a complete turnaround, which was lovely. So that was good.
No, and that's lovely. So in the end, he was on the ketogenic diet for how many years? So he started when he was about 7.
Yeah, and he came off. He came off when he was about 13, and it was not for any particular reason. Yeah, he was on about 6 years. He did 3 years classical, 3 years MCT, and we kind of decided to give him a bit of a keto break. It was in discussion with Helen, and she said, well, let's give him a little break, see how he gets on. If necessary, we'll put him back on. He was doing well. There was no problems with him, but it was just, you know, he'd been 6 years. There was evidence coming out to say maybe the diet's done all it's needed to do after that time. So I started a slow wean, but with the proviso that if things got worse, he would go straight back on.
You must have been quite afraid. You must have been quite afraid of doing it. You know, it's that, you know,
terrified.
It's worked so well, and you think, right, maybe this has got to be like this forever. But sometimes it doesn't, does it?
Yeah.
And this is that fear of allowing it to slip and not being able to get back.
Yeah.
Really hard.
Yeah, I think that was important for me, that I had the option, or I was reassured that if things went downhill, I would go straight back on.
Yeah.
It wasn't like, that's it, you're being weaned off.
Important.
Yeah. Game over. Mm-hmm. It was... that was really important that I had that. Mm. But no, Matthew was weaned off. And again, the diet had done its job. And, you know, he's now, time of recording now, he's what, 26?
Yes.
So, and he's still 90% controlled to what he was. So the diet has done its job. But even to this day, if Matthew was to go downhill, obviously we've now discovered he's got Dravet syndrome as well. Mm. If Matthew was to go downhill again, diet would be my first option straight back for him.
Yeah, because you know it's worked brilliantly for him in the past.
Definitely go back.
Yeah, so moving on and bringing things forward, you actually launched Matthew's Friends charity in 2004. And so how have things moved on in the world of medical ketogenic therapy since then? Because we're some time on from there now, aren't we?
We are. And I think the reason for setting up the charity in the first place is because I was so angry. And that's it. You know, I've since, you know, Jim Abraham's funny from the Charlie Foundation and myself have forged a friendship, and, you know, our charities work side by side. And we're both driven by the anger and to a certain extent guilt, because you can't help this overwhelming feeling of guilt of, why did I listen in the first place? Why did I do that? You know, I'd calculated that if I'd have got Matthew on the diet at 2 when I first asked for it, and not at 7, I would have saved him in excess of nearly 25,000 seizures minimum. And that's a number I can't get out of my head. So you're driven by anger because none of the things that you were told that the diet was about came true. Matthew was fine. He thrived. He loved his food. There wasn't terrible side effects to it, you know. And I knew, and the reason for setting up Matthew's Friends is that I knew other families were going to be told the same thing if they'd gone like I had. So I wanted families to have an informed choice about things. I wanted them to have the right to maybe read somebody's story and go, this is what I was told, this is what I found out for myself, and this is what I would suggest to you. Don't listen to everything. Go with your inner instinct and push forward. So It was tough to start off with. Obviously, we supported Helen and the Great Ormond Street trial as well, because that was important and that was a game changer.
Yes, so you knew that was really making a difference in the UK.
Yeah, research. This is where Matthew's Friends is a big advocate of research, and where we have invested money is because once we get the results in, that's a game changer for the medical community, which is where we need it to go. Because that proved its efficacy once and for all. And once that results of that trial came out, we could, you know, it went around the world. We finally, even though there were lots of studies and we knew it worked, we had to have that class one evidence in order to really to be able to make that difference. So that was really important. And then from there, it was about making sure we got service and that the families knew about it. So a lot of our work has gone into education, training, knowledge, and making sure that people know about it so they can ask, and again that informed choice for the families, both for children with drug resistant epilepsy as well as adults now with drug resistant, because it's they're a very important community and they don't have enough service by a long shot, and we know that adults can be helped as well. So we're very much just a medical ketogenic diet charity, and that was the whole idea of the setup. So the diet's come on. It's now here to stay.
Yes.
Which is great. It's certainly acknowledged now. I think we're still lacking in service. I still don't think there's enough referrals being made through, especially for adults. So I still think there's work to do, but it's definitely a lot better than it was. And obviously we've got to work harder in the poorer areas of the world that haven't got the diet. So our remit is still there. But things have got better. At least the diet is now here to stay. And the old reasons for not going on the diet have kind of been blown out of the water. You see what's going on with the ketogenic diet. And you can't say it's unpalatable anymore. No. You can't say it's disgusting. You can't say that kids are going to be at risk. They're going to be at no more risk than going on another medication.
Yes.
You know, and they're going to be managed probably even closer than they would be if they are on a medication. So if anything, it's safer. You've got a dietitian, you've probably got a nurse and neurologist all looking after you. Yeah. So, you know.
No, I think, I mean, I would agree that it's the, within the paediatric world, it's more accepted, and within neurology, it's accepted. But within the adult sector, I think it's just, it's a chicken and egg. There either aren't services, but maybe a neurologist wants to refer somebody.
Yeah.
They can't refer. Or, you know, there are individuals looking for the treatment and they can't get hold of a team. So it is tough for adults at the moment.
Yeah, it is.
So, but, you know, it's possible. So really, so what would you say then to, again, healthcare professionals who may be listening to this, who are wondering whether to recommend ketogenic therapy to their drug-resistant patients?
I think my biggest message was, yes, recommend it. It must always recommend it. We're at the stage with the global consensus statement where we say if two drugs have failed, then, or two appropriate medications for the seizure type has failed, then other options should be looked into. And the ketogenic diet is one of those. If we could get it to that stage, we'd be coming on a long way. Unfortunately, I don't think not all centres, not all places in the world are at that stage. And they're not recommending the ketogenic diet early enough. We've still got families and children that are going down 5, 6, 7 medications and years down the line. And then they're only going about, oh, well, there's a diet you might be able to try, but it's really difficult, et cetera, et cetera. I think the other message I would say to the healthcare professionals is don't underestimate your families that you've got in front of you. In the past, obviously, I've been working in this field now for about 18 years solely. And I've actually had doctors turn around to me and say, oh, well, only educated families can do this diet. And I'm like, actually, don't say that. Don't say that, you know, and you've got to be educated to be able to do it. People that haven't got an education can't do the diet. And I've listened to this and I'm like, you are so wrong. You are so wrong. I have seen, you know, no disrespect to them, but I've seen the most educated families not be able to cope with it and need a lot of support. And that's no disrespect to them. Everybody, you know, everybody can feel overwhelmed with it. And, you know, and I've seen the families where some of these doctors wouldn't recommend the diet, but they've done it. And yes, they've needed support, but they've absolutely flown with it. Absolutely flown with it. So my take-home message is never underestimate your family. And I think the perfect example of that is the Sharma Group in India. They were given the Matthews Friends poster prize at the Liverpool Global Conference we did. Not because they did anything, you know, wonderfully scientific or... Sorry about that. Not that they, you know, the Sharma Group in India, not that they did anything amazingly scientific, but what they did was they had a lot of, in the poorest communities they serve, they did a lot of work with illiterate families, couldn't read or write. So what they did was they simplified the diet as much as they could, and then they gave them visuals. So they put everything in picture format of what to do. So they changed their work, they changed their teaching methods in order to accommodate those families. And that made their patients better. And that always stands out to me as a wonderful example of how you don't write off any families. You don't write off any patient that needs the help. They may need extra support, but don't say that they can't do it because there are ways around it. You know, if you look at somebody and go, they may need extra support, but here, let's do it. Let's see how we can help them. And I think that's the biggest take home message I would say, and always encourage. And I'm a great one for, you know, if hospitals need to have a waiting list in order to get more service, then have a waiting list. Don't not refer them because you're like, oh, well, we haven't got service. Create the demand for the service. And then we can work with trusts or whatever medical authorities we need to. But actually, you know, refer your patients that you want to. And if there's nowhere to refer, start making a waiting list and start making noises that we need this. And certainly we'll do everything we can to help them.
No, that's really, really positive. And I think the other thing is the fact that generally it's about 3 to 4 months and you're going to know whether this is going to work or not.
Yeah.
And it's a relatively short space of time.
Absolutely.
And again, if families or adults are wanting to have a go, they're keen and they're interested. Obviously, it's an active treatment, not a passive treatment. It's an active one. So they've got to get involved. But absolutely, if they want to have a go, it's a short period of time and it should be supported. So, no, I think that's wonderful. Thank you so much. That's been really, really inspiring. And it's always fabulous to hear the story and how things have moved along. So I just want to close by saying many thanks, Emma.
You're welcome. You're welcome.
And joining me today. And we hope that our listeners have had a really interesting time listening to this discussion. And I just want to say thank you again to Nutricia Ketogenics for making this podcast series possible. And finally, I wish you all the very best and thank you for listening.